It's a Friday, and we always talk it over with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. Ben, so much to get into, even though the sports world locally is kind of stopped. No Cardinal baseball. Hot stove is here. Not a lot going on. Blues have not picked up yet. We're still waiting for Billiken basketball. We do have Mizzou football, but let's jump in with Major League Baseball. The Gold Gloves were announced this week. Colton Wong picks up his second. Tyler O'Neill is first, and Paul Goldschmidt does not win the Gold Glove. Now, there was no human vote as a part of this, no human element. It was strictly based on metrics. What are your thoughts on Tyler O'Neill, Colton Wong, and no Paul Goldschmidt in the Gold Glove?
Yeah, three thoughts. One, congratulations to Colton Wong. Totally deserved, and certainly polishes up his resume as he looks for a new team now, as he's going to be one of the guys that goes down as kind of the microcosm, I think, of this new baseball market with this COVID offseason. There would not, in a normal season, Colton Wong's option would be picked up by the Cardinals, no questions asked. This would be a non-story. And instead, he's one of a bunch of guys who are going to be looking for new teams on lower paydays. So, but that confirms what we know. He's the best defensive second baseman in baseball. Tyler O'Neill is surprising to me. I mean, the numbers are there. I was a little surprised, you know, just because he wasn't the every single day starter in left field. We talked a lot going into this season about some of the skills he has that are probably underappreciated, his speed, his athleticism, but I certainly never thought he'd win a Gold Glove. It's ironic somewhat because we're talking about maybe needing to replace him in the outfield. And, you know, the problem is the one thing that he was supposed to guarantee to have, which was power. And that flickered this year, but his defense was good. But I'll be honest, Dan, I have a problem with Paul Goldschmidt not being a Gold Glove winner and Tyler O'Neill being one for the Cardinals. I don't know how that works. That doesn't compute in my brain. I thought Paul Goldschmidt got robbed last year when the Cardinals went from being the team with the most errors in baseball to the team with the fewest, and he was a huge part of that. I don't know how he got overlooked. And I think he got robbed again this year, where the Cardinals led the league in defensive runs saved. I can argue with the voters last year. I can argue with the numbers this year. And I got a lot of respect for Anthony Rizzo. I think he's a great player. He's one of my favorite players to watch and interview. I think he's a truly great person. But my goodness, how can you watch games from both of these teams and not think that Paul Goldschmidt is the best defensive second baseman in this division, let alone you maybe can make a case he's the best defensive first baseman in baseball. You make a stronger one, he's the best in the National League, but how is he not the best first baseman defensively in this division? I don't know.
I would also, you know, the manager of the year came out. Now, I've been on record from day one. I think it's Don Mattingly. They used 61 different players in 60 games. They went through the COVID outbreak. I don't think they have the talent of the Cardinals. I think they've got better talent than maybe most thought, improving on a 105-loss team. Don Mattingly would get my vote, but not to have Mike Shildt as a finalist, I think, is a disservice, and I wonder if that's done because he won it a year ago. What do you think about that? I just thought he should have been in the top three after what the Cardinals went through twice with COVID-19 outbreaks and got into postseason play.
I had him in my top three. I had a vote for the award this year. And now that it's out, I can talk about that. I did have Don Mattingly first because of the reasons you mentioned. No one was expecting that out of the Marlins. And then all of the COVID things they overcame, I think it was that much more impressive. Shildt, for the same reason, people did expect the Cardinals to be in the postseason. But when you have a layoff of, you know, 14 days without baseball activities, I think that's pretty amazing what they were able to do in order to even make the postseason. It's not Shildt's fault the team can't hit and doesn't have good hitters. It was what they did in spite of that for a second year in a row with a huge COVID curveball. I thought that deserved some recognition as well. Jace Tingler made a strong case. I didn't include him in my selection. I was kind of disappointed in Tingler. Remember, this is regular season voting. We don't get to vote after the postseason. So this was cast before the Padres beat the Cardinals in the postseason. But I thought he kind of misplayed his hand with that whole Fernando Tatis Jr. thing, that flap about the 3-0 home run earlier in the regular season. And people say, well, that's no big deal. And it turned out not to be. He and Tatis Jr. got over it. But I'll say this, I think picking the other side when you have an opportunity to stick up for your star player, one of the best young talent, most talented players in baseball, and the manager sounds like he's going with the other guy. I thought that was a rookie mistake. So I did factor that into my voting. And Cardinals fans might not like this, but I gave some love in my manager of the year selection to David Ross as well. Here's why. No one was expecting everyone was kind of expecting the Cubs to fall apart this year. And kind of if you're going to factor COVID in for what Schilt and Mattingly coached the teams through, then I think you have to give some love for a team that really did a good job of avoiding the virus. And the Cubs, from start to finish, did not have a player test positive for COVID-19. Now, you can argue that that's luck, or you can argue that it's a team, doing things the right way to avoid it. So I think it kind of comes down to how you want to weigh coronavirus in this. Either you're going to punish a manager for not helping his team avoid it, or you're going to reward a manager for helping his team avoid it, or you're not going to factor it in at all. But it didn't make sense to me to go through this season analysis-wise and ignore the presence of COVID. So I think you can give some love to the managers who helped their teams overcome it when they came into contact with, and I think you can give some love to the managers who helped their team avoid it.
All right, you made me think. I did not have David Ross on my top three, but you just gave me a reason to maybe think why I should have. I did have, obviously, I don't have a vote, but I had Don Mattingly winning it, and then Mike Schilt, Jace Tingler. Tingler getting in, young team, exciting team, great year for the Padres, and right. The other two guys already mentioned, and we can go ad nauseum as the reason why, dealing with COVID-19. For David Ross, I was looking strictly baseball because I did think the Cubs are going to be very good this year, and their lineup was good, minus really nothing from Javi Baez, but no bullpen and really one reliable starter, great starter in Yu Darvish. Kyle Hendricks had his run against the Cardinals, and that's why David Ross would get my look at it from a baseball perspective. But you're right, we need to look at that too. And you could say, well, it's luck, but it might have been something that was done inside that clubhouse. And maybe it was eye-opening too what the Cubs saw with their pitching coach going through COVID-19 and dealing with that on a severe nature of what he dealt with. And it was eye-opening, I'm sure, for many of them. So, to your point, I think you're right. That's a good way to look at it too. You can't look at one way and not look at the other. So, I got to look at both sides.
Well, and looking at it now, I probably am wrong for not having Tingler on it, because I thought what Jace Tingler did during that series against the Cardinals was really sharp managing. I mean, they reverse engineered a bullpen approach, not because they wanted to, because they had to. They had two starters go down before that series started, and they pulled out a hell of a bullpen game that was really impressive. So he proved me wrong. I need to be honest and candid about that. I thought he did a great job in that series. And we should also say too that Dave Roberts deserves some love here, because he has the best toys in the garage. Okay, the best horse, the most horsepower, and he doesn't really have to do all that much, but he does have to, help exercise the demons that the Dodgers were carrying with them of getting to the finish line and falling flat on their face once they got there. So I think if you include the postseason, you give more love to Tingler and you say, hey, Dave Roberts, you had a great team, but you also took that team to a place where it hadn't been in a long, long time. And they had been known for getting there and falling apart. He pushed them through the finish line this time, and that deserves a lot of credit too.
I had Freddie Freeman as my MVP. I had Trevor Bauer as my Cy Young Award winner. I'm curious where you went with that direction.
I didn't have a vote in those, so I can say who I would have picked. And yeah. I would have agreed with you, man. I think Freeman, too, you remember the season that he had, and you look back and go, my God, there was a point when I said, and I remember talking to you about this, I said, look, I don't think that guys who test positive for COVID, I think they might not play this year, because they have to pass all these tests. They could have fatigue. And we have had some guys who had fatigue. I mean, ask around about what Lane Thomas was dealing with when he came back from COVID.
There's talk of a reason. Dizziness and, just
there
completely
was a reason.
Exhausted. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a reason he looked like he hadn't played outfield before. It's not because he's a bad outfielder. We've seen him play good outfield before. He was screwed up. So not everybody's affected the same way. For Freddie Freeman to be, laid flat by the virus, come back and have not only a good season, but an amazing 60-game season for a Braves team that took a big step forward, I think he's your MVP. The one guy I would have liked to see get a full season, and he was impacted by COVID as well. He said it was a false positive, but he couldn't get the requirements to get back on the field as soon as he wanted. Juan Soto had a hell of a year for the Nationals, and he didn't get the love because he didn't play enough of the season. But if he would have had a full year like this, I think he would have been your winner.
I'm really fascinated what happens with Francisco Lindor. Now that we're in a situation where a lot of people, I don't think there's going to be a lot of movement. Maybe two or three teams go out and sign some teams. The Mets seem to be, could be, if they wanted to be aggressive, the Yankees, maybe the Dodgers, a team or two. Other than that, prior to December 2nd could be aggressive. Then I bring up December 2nd because that's arbitration, guys, and you may see some of those guys not tendered contracts. So it could get interesting with them once more names even hit the market. But maybe the biggest chip out there is that the Indians, according to Bob Nightingale in USA Today, he had a tweet and said, look, the guy's on the market. We're open for business. Let's see what best offers we can get. How do you think he would fit, number one, with the Cardinals? And I think I can answer that. He'd be awesome. He'd be awesome on any team, but because the guy's a fabulous player. But, you know, I'm really fascinated, curious what you think about where he might go and would the Cardinals want to even dip their toe into that water?
How does a Porsche look in your driveway, Danny? It looks pretty good in mine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's a team out there that says, hey, he doesn't fit with us. He fits with every team. He's a great player, first of all, an outstanding one, an elite one. First and foremost, by all accounts, I don't know him personally, but by all accounts, he's a great teammate and beloved by fans. He's about the right things. He improves the team. I mean, he checks all the boxes. He's kind of in that, I wouldn't say he's Mookie Betts, but he's in that realm of a player who they say kind of lifts all boats, right? A guy who makes everybody around him better. Paul Goldschmidt is one of those guys. He lifts up everybody around him, and I think Lindor counts in that category as well. So, would he be a fit with the Cardinals? Yeah, you could answer the question at third base by moving over Paul DeJong, who has gotten so much better at shortstop. But look, if you have Francisco Lindor, you move Paul DeJong over, and Paul DeJong gets that. You know, he understands why. If you move Paul DeJong over for a guy who's not better than him, then he probably doesn't like that. But if it's Francisco Lindor, you say, yeah, we just got a lot better. I'll go to third base. And it's the same thing that, you know, Manny Machado did when he signed with the team that had Fernando Tatis Jr. Remember hearing about how Machado wanted to play short. Well, not when you play with Tatis Jr. You go to third base and you like it. And that's how that would work. And he'd be an improvement, man. I mean, that's the only way to say it, a huge improvement that would help fill the problem with the offense and not sacrifice the defensive first mentality that the Cardinals have already kind of chipped into by letting Colton Wong walk. And I don't expect Colton Wong to be back with the Cardinals. It would be great, but I just think he probably ends up moving on. Now comes the hard part, the but. It's going to cost a lot to get him. You're only guaranteed to have him for a year. And then you're going to look at that staggering payday that he's going to be looking for, whether it's with an extension with the team he's traded to or on the open market. And I go back to the same thing that I go back to when we talk about Machado and Harper. He is so young that he's not a Paul Goldschmidt type where he's looking to play a year at a place, realize that his next run at free agency might not be all it's cracked up to be and take a really nice deal to stay put. Francisco Lindor is young. He's going to get a big bite at free agency. If I were him, I would like to experience the thrills of that. And I'd like to shop around and see who wants me most, see who wants to pay me the most for the longest amount of time. Now, if he's worried about what that free agency could look like, if he's worried about, you know, things like a work stoppage, maybe his camp says, hey, get what you can now. But these guys don't think like that. They think, I'm young, I deserve this, I earned it, I want to go and hear every team's best offer. So before you trade for that player, you better be sure you like your chances of keeping him around long term. And I don't know how any team could like those chances. And that gives me a lot of reason to think the Cardinals would not be swimming in those waters at this time, even though it would make them a better team.
At this point, we should be talking hockey. We should be talking about the season getting going. We should be talking about line combinations. And yet we're talking about if and when the season will start.
Yeah, we don't have a schedule yet, man.
Yeah. There have been some reports, Ben, that I'm sure you've seen some of these things, but at least just just kind of rumors out there, you know, is it worth doing a 40-game season, a half year, a 50-year? Because you want to at some point get back on a normal schedule. And NBC has got the Olympics. NBC also carries hockey. How does that affect the schedule? Can fans be in the stands? Hockey, maybe more than any of these sports, they need fans in the stands. What do you think about playing a season this year, just in a general sense, and trying to get this thing going?
I think they got to do something. It might look different. It might be changed, but you can't have a year in which you've already played a postseason and then say, well, it's not worth us trying. No, these guys want to play. They don't want to take a year off. Players in their prime don't want to gather rust for a full year. Now, it might look different. It might look shortened. It might look, it might be another year in which they don't make the money they want to make, but I've yet to see convincing evidence that it's more financially, you know, intelligent for these leagues to not play than it is to put some sort of altered performance out there for TV revenue. Now, I get it that they're losing money, but what we haven't seen is a full audit or numbers on here's what we would make if we were not playing at all, and here's what we make if we play in an altered way with limited or no fans for TV purposes. That's hard for me to believe. Now, maybe it's true, and maybe we'll get some sort of numbers that prove it, but right now it's hard for me to believe. So I think there will be something, but my goodness, it's crazy to sit here now in the the first week of November and talk about not having hockey schedule, not having a college basketball schedule. I mean, we're seeing tentative schedules, but everything very much right now is up in the air. And I think fans have to kind of embrace themselves for the fact that, assuming that the strangest or the most frustrating things got sports-wise in terms of viewing and schedules and knowing what was coming, assuming that it was during these postseasons that we saw play out and during a 60-game baseball season, assuming that was the worst, I don't know that that's going to be the case, and I don't want to sound like a doomsdayer. I want games to happen. I need them to happen, and we all do, and we're rooting for that. But assuming that it was just going to be this strange baseball season and these strange bubbles for postseason and then back to normal, I'm not sure that that's going to be the case.
In terms of college football, that is rolling on. Mizzou has a bye week this weekend. Their schedule has just been crazy in terms of, well, we'll play this. No, play at home. No, you got a bye week. No, switch these games around. Well, they do have a bye week this weekend, so they're off. They've got Georgia next. What a home schedule, by the way, that could have been normally.
Yeah.
You know, you would have been LSU on the road, but it got changed because of the weather. But you had Alabama at home, Georgia at home, LSU at home. It would have been awesome to be at Faurot Field. Now, having said all that, they did go to the Swamp. They got smoked, and we saw a lot of extracurricular activity to Dan Mullen going on to the other hash. And, you know, the bench is clear, and some of it got ugly. We got suspensions. Mullen is fined $25,000. What did you think about what you saw last Saturday?
Man, Dan Mullen has gone he's gone full Florida man, Dan. Like, he's like, something about the water down there makes people crazy. You see all these crazy headlines, you know, about people robbing gas stations in tutus, like high on bath salts. Like, and you think, man, it's something about Florida. No, I shouldn't just claim a state is crazy. But then you see Dan Mullen do this kind of stuff, and you go, maybe it is something in the water in Florida. It kind of smells a little funny, you know, when you go down for spring training, you jump in the shower, the water smells a little weird. I think that's what it is. But man, he's always been a little cuckoo, but we just didn't hear as much about it because he was in Starkville and not Florida. But my goodness, that was crazy. And I got to say, I like Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, a lot. I really do. I think he's great at what he does. But I don't understand how a coach who incites a brawl, that's what he did. He incited a brawl. Let's not kid ourselves. There was a fight. It was bad. The reason it was as bad as it was because Dan Mullen was out there going nuts and incites a brawl, then goes to his post-game press conference and treats it like a joke, ignores questions about it, wears a damn Darth Vader costume, and he gets fined $25,000, which is nothing to him, doesn't have to miss a game, which is what the players who are involved in this thing had to miss, which they get. They get four seasons, Dan, if they're healthy for all of them. Dan Mullen gets as many seasons as someone wants to pay him to coach. Why should they miss a game when he doesn't have to miss? He has to write a check that he won't notice come out of his account. And then you're going to tell me that that penalty, which is what he got, a 25K, is the same level as what Lane Kiffin gets when he retweets something that is critical of officiating? Lane Kiffin, and I don't like to defend Lane Kiffin, he pressed the retweet button. It was stupid, but he did it. Dan Mullen encouraged a brawl. Aren't there differences between those things? I think that was a bad step by Sankey, and I'm not defending Mizzou. You can't get in a fight on the field. Those guys deserve to be punished, and I credit Eli Drinkwitz for having the leadership to criticize it and be critical of his players who are involved in it after the game, and you know, he condemned it, but Dan Mullen was acting like it was no big deal. So I don't know what – I mean, the game is at that point moot. Now, it's a disappointing game for Mizzou because they had played really well entering it. It's not a shame to lose to Florida, even though they had 2 weeks, you know, off due to COVID, but they didn't play very well. So they've got some time now to kind of answer some questions, catch their breath a little bit. Then they got to go play Georgia, a Georgia team that wants to be in the college football playoffs. So that's what I took from it. But other than Dan Mullen going nuts, I thought Sankey really missed a chance to say, hey, man, figure your stuff out because you're acting crazy and it's a bad look for our league. I think he missed that opportunity.
I'm interested, too, about what kind of team Mizzou can field in terms of numbers. You know, you don't really know about the COVID guys. You got injuries anyway with football. Now you got suspensions. And if you go to earlier interview I had on the podcast with Chris Trevino, I mean, he was talking about 62, maybe 61 guys playing. And in football, it's not a lot. You know, they were decimated on that offensive line. You could see it. So I'm really curious what they've got going in against Georgia.
Yeah, not a good year to have guys suspended for being knuckleheads, all right? I'll give Mizzou credit this, though. I think one of the things that cracks me up about baseball is there are a lot of guys who act like they want to fight, but when it comes time to fight, they're really not about that life.
Oh, they got after it on Saturday, yeah.
Hey, Mizzou, hey, if you're going to get in a fight! So, hey, they were there, and they were not there to rub chesticles together. They were getting after it, and so... Hey, I forget to get your money's worth if you're going to go that route, but not smart, and they can't let that happen. And Drinkwitz knows that he can't have that happen in his first year, and it can't be it's going to be a little bit of a black mark on his first season. Now, let's see how they respond to it. Let's see how they ride the ship. Or they still have a chance to have a really, really impressive first season under Eli Drinkwitz, and I think that, you know, Mizzou fans are not going to be too mad that their team went down to the swamp and mixed it up with the Gators. They just wish they would have mixed it up more in the when it comes to the final score. So yeah, man, every team right now is worried about the field, you know, the team that it can field. You and I talked about the Big Ten a while back, and I said, you know, this was not some Nostradamus prediction. I said this is going to be a disaster.
Yeah,
because the rules that they've implemented, there's no way they're going to be able to have a full season, and they didn't give themselves any bye weeks to do what Mizzou has done, where they flip their schedule around. It took all of like 3 days for Wisconsin to become a shell of itself because of COVID cases, and they don't get to make any games up. So I think the Big Ten is going to be a continued disaster. I'm telling you what, this will be the year, kind of like, you know, not to make a political reference, but we're talking a lot about should we change the way we do politics in our country. This will be the year that makes the college football playoff expand to 8 teams, because there's going to be some Big Ten team that played like 4 or 5 games that's undefeated, and they're going to be honked off. They didn't get treated like an SEC team that had played, you know, significantly more games. And someone's going to have a very good case that this was bogus, why they didn't expand this year just for a 1-year trial. You know, today we can go back to the normal way when things are back to normal. I don't know why. They could have given themselves a huge out and tested the model. Instead, they stuck with what they normally do, and somebody's going to get screwed, and it's not going to be something that just goes away.
I'm curious, too, about the game this weekend, Clemson, Notre Dame, and no Trevor Lawrence. So this is huge for Clemson, man. Huge for Notre Dame, and this is what you're talking about. You know, the potential of a one-loss team that maybe plays a full schedule, like these two may play, and yet could be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, well, that conference is a joke this year, and now if Notre Dame beats Clemson, that's terrible. I mean, this is terrible for the ACC because, you know, Clemson's going to say, well, we have to be in because we were without our number one quarterback. Notre Dame says we entered this conference in order to have a better shot of making the playoff. It's not our fault Trevor Lawrence got COVID. I mean, this is exactly what I was talking about. Compare that to You know, what if Ohio, you know, you just don't know. What if Ohio State ends up playing like four or five games? You just, it's going to be a nightmare. And the SEC is going to go, we played a full schedule and allowed ourselves a way to do that. We're going to get punished for playing more games. How is that fair? But yeah, I think everybody in the ACC has to be hoping and praying that Clemson finds a way to beat Notre Dame, because that's probably, you know, the only team in that conference, and I use conference in air quotes because Notre Dame's not usually a part of it, that has a chance of beating Clemson. Although I'll give credit to Boston College for being admirable in its game against Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, they got to get him back ASAP, but they got to win a war before that against Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's looking at that going, these guys are ripe. We could be in the playoff if we beat these guys. So it's going to be a mess. And I think the ACC suits who approved of Notre Dame joining for a year are probably kicking themselves right now.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Hey, this is fun, man. Great stuff as always. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you up next Friday. I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about.
You're the best, man. Talk to you soon.